Welcome to At Work in America, sponsored by Paychex. At Work in America digs in behind the headlines and trends to the stories of real people making a difference in the world of work. And now, here are your hosts, Steve Bowes and Trish Steed.
Welcome to the At Work in America podcast. My name's Steve Bowes, and I'm joined by Trish Steed. Trish, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. It's my favorite show of the year.
We are celebrating on this show. Our theme for the year is celebration. It's the 15th anniversary of our podcast, and we're celebrating on this show, one of our favorite shows. This is the Academy Awards preview and prediction show. We're celebrating the 96th Academy Awards, honoring movies of 2023. With our reviews and our predictions. And we brought in a special guest for this year for the first time ever on the Oscar show, which I guess we've been doing for 6 or 7 or 8 years.
Probably 7 or 8 at this point.
Yeah. Our guest today is Patrick Bowes. He's a film student and content creator focusing on pop culture, film, and current events. Some recent topics include the rise of AI in the creative space, a failed Willy Wonka scam event, and the impact of private jets on climate change. Subtitled How Taylor Swift is Destroying the Planet. Patrick, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You had to give away the fact that that private jet story was at the expense of Taylor Swift.
I did enjoy the video. And by the way, I'll just give you a shout out. Your most recent video on the Willy Wonka scam event, which has been in the news lately, that's done quite well on YouTube with many thousands of views. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to, right as the event was happening, do some in-depth research and coverage of the event, and it did pretty well. It's a very well-covered event, but I just started the channel about a month and a half ago and have been very overwhelmed with about 22,000 views or so.
Yeah,
a lot of encouraging amazing. Comments.
So I'm going to be tapping into your expertise for some of our video work, so stay tuned for that. Trish, We must thank our friends at Paychex, of course. So let's thank them before we get into the Oscars conversation. This episode of At Work in America is sponsored by our friends at Paychex, one of the leading providers of HR, payroll, retirement, and insurance solutions for businesses of all sizes. 2024 is going to be an amazing year for HR tech. AI and automation can finally offer significant time savings on daily HR management and transform hiring, reporting, managing your workforce, and more. But Trish, you were probably wondering, where do I even begin with upgrading my HR tech? And Trish, I'm going to throw it to you. What can our friends who are listening do? And what have we done with our friends at Paychex to help figuring out their HR tech?
You know what? They have so many great resources, but probably one of the best ebooks and research pieces that I can say we've both been a part of is coming out. It's out right now, and it's with our friends at Paychex and a number of other analysts and influencers in the space of all ages, right? Runs the gamut in all areas of expertise as it relates to work. So I'm really proud that that's coming out, and I can't wait for everyone to sort of click through and see what that's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we encourage everybody to go out to paychex.com/AWIA. Check out the toolkit. That's Paychex, paychex.com/AWIA to start your journey towards fixing your legacy processes and embracing the new era of HR tech. It is a super slick ebook, one that I'm super excited to be a part of. Trish, you did a great job in leading that project with our friends at Paychex. So please check that out. All right, let's get on to the fun. Not that HR tech and toolkits aren't fun. They are fun, but it's a different kind of fun. For new listeners, we do the Oscar show every year. We've been doing it for 7 or 8 years, like we said. It's kind of a show for us, right, Trish? We take a little break from the world of work and HR tech and the workplace and do something that we're both kind of interested in, passionate about. We spend 2 months watching movies to get ready for this show. And we thought we'd bring on Patrick this year. He's a film buff, armchair film critic. I'm actually a published film critic. Patrick, yes. Why don't you share like your sort of your background with movie criticism and movie reviews and how you feel about the movies in general?
Sure. So I've loved movies for as long as I remember. You know, one of the people in this Zoom call, I think we can hold responsible for that.
You're welcome.
But Yeah, I mean, I just from a very young age, I think the impact of going to a movie theater and just being able to give your undivided attention to somebody's story and narrative for 2 hours and the visual elements of it and the audio and the story, it's all very impressive. From my background, I've done various movie reviews, both digitally online as well as in my throughout my time in high school. I was the film columnist, which was very fun. But I do think that criticism can be at times a little bit tiring. But once a year for during an Oscar podcast, I think is a great venue for it.
I was going to say too. I mean, I think it's very similar to the jobs that we do with HR technologies, right? We're sort of here to analyze and sometimes make criticism, but also give kudos where it's really warranted. And I think that's what I like about this show. And Patrick, I know you're going to bring a whole different perspective, right? Just not just only from an age perspective, but also as someone who's really studied this. And so both been a film buff, but maybe just a little insight on what have you studied in college that kind of do you think helps you as you're evaluating a movie, whether it be for fun or for something like this?
Well, the line that gets tossed around is once you learn anything about film as a genre and study it, you kind of movies are ruined for you. And I'm like, no, that's not going to be true. And then, now at this point in my life, I find myself being a lot more critical about movies than I used to be. But there's one element, which is the technical, particularly how a movie is filmed, how it's shot, the color balance, grading, exposure, technical things, lighting, how it's edited in terms of the pacing, the choices of shots and cuts. But I think the main lesson that I always try to keep in mind with in talking about stuff like this is that movies at their core are accessible to anyone, and you don't need to be someone who is seeing it, and you don't need to be someone who's like read a ton about it to go and watch these movies. I think for the most part, all of these movies are very accessible to anyone, which I think is kind of another hallmark of a good movie.
Yeah, I think also just more accessible even in the last few years with streaming services. And then also, I think that it's important when you think about movies that would be nominated because Steve and I for years have tried to guess before the actual nominations come out. And you sort of think of these as, I don't know if smart movies is the right word, but sort of movies that make you think, right? Although this year there are a couple maybe that don't make you think as much on the surface, right? But there are certainly movies that you might, come to thoughts or ideas that you might not experience in your normal everyday life. And so for me, it's not just a way to escape, but to learn. And I think there are a number of movies on this year that we're going to talk about where it really makes you think differently than maybe the way you're raised or where you're from or whatever.
I'd say for me, this whole project of doing this Oscars podcast every year for the last whatever 7 or 8 years, like we said, it soured me on average movies. I refuse to
All
go
the
watch a
blockbusters.
movie that I don't believe is going to have a chance to be nominated for Best Picture. I do. I'm like, nah, that is that like, look, I'm a big Godzilla versus Rodan kind of fan. I'm not going to the theater to see that because there's no way it's getting nominated, right?
Oh,
So,
seriously? No,
yeah.
see, I like summertime and early fall for that. I bring me Sharknado all day long,
Yes.
right?
Tornado's good, but
Anything like that, I'm all like this year, I would say, and maybe Patrick, you might have one that comes to mind, but this year I went and saw Strays, which was like the talking dogs. Like, who pays for that? I did. So
needless to
sometimes
say,
I want a movie
Strays
to
was
just
not
do it.
nominated this year for Best Picture. So
It was
here's
not.
what I'd like to do to sort of help corral and organize this show. I'll run through the Best Picture nominees really quickly, just by name. There are 10 of them. We center our viewing around those Best Picture nominees. We've seen most of them. Patrick's seen them all. Trish and I have seen almost all of them. And then we'll dive into some of the acting categories, and then we'll circle back at the end and give our Best Picture nominees. So just in case anybody hasn't seen these movies or even heard of them, here are the top 10 Best Picture nominees with a real quick synopsis of each, and I'll run through them fast. American Fiction, a novelist who's fed up with the establishment profiting from Black entertainment, uses a pen name to write a book that propels him into the heart of the hypocrisy and madness he claims to disdain. Next is Anatomy of a Fall. A woman is suspected of murder after her husband's death. Oh, spouses never kill each other. That's surprising. And their half-blind son faces a moral dilemma as the main witness. Barbie, of course, needs no explanation. We all know what Barbie is. I'm sure everybody saw it. The Holdovers, a cranky history teacher at a remote prep school, is forced to remain on campus over the holidays with a grieving cook and a troubled student. Killers of the Flower Moon, this is the one I did not see. When oil is discovered in 1920s Oklahoma under Osage Nation land, the Osage people are murdered one by one until the FBI steps in to unravel the mystery. Then we have Maestro, a love story chronicling the lifelong relationship of the conductor-composer Leonard Bernstein and the actress Felicia Montalegre Cohn Bernstein. Oppenheimer, most people probably saw this one too, huge summer movie about the American scientist J. Robert Oppenheimer and his role in the development of the atomic bomb. I'll skip ahead. That movie's an hour too long. Past Lives, Nora and Hae Sung, two deeply connected childhood friends, arrested apart after Nora's family emigrates from South Korea. 20 years later, they're reunited in one fateful week. Poor Things, the incredible tale about the fantastical evolution of Bella Baxter, a young woman brought back to life by the brilliant and unorthodox scientist, Dr. Godwin Baxter. And finally, The Zone of Interest, a feel-good movie about Auschwitz. Auschwitz Commandant Rudolf Hoss and his wife Hedwig strive to build a dream life for their family in a house and garden beside the infamous camp. Those are the 10. Wow, that's quite the list. And I was sort of joking about a couple of them, but not really. Let's get into it. Should we do our first category?
Let's go.
Yeah.
All right, taking a breath. The first category we want to talk about, actor in a supporting role. Here are your nominees. Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo from Poor Things. Trish, I'll throw it to you first, and Patrick, you stand by for your commentary.
Well, so first of all, out of those actors, I love them all. I will just, in full transparency, I love Mark Ruffalo, and I was hoping I would love him the most. I did not. I love Sterling K. Brown, but I've not actually seen that movie. I'm going to be seeing it this week before the actual Oscar ceremony. So unfortunately, I cannot vote for him, although I'm wondering if he is actually the best. But of the remaining ones that I did see, I did like Robert Downey Jr. and Oppenheimer. I know you think that movie is too long. I don't disagree with that, but I think that he brought realism. What I liked about him is he can play in all these different movies and I believe who he is. He's never the same character. You know, there are sometimes actors like Tom Cruise. It doesn't matter what movie Tom Cruise is in.
America's finest actor.
No, he's always the same guy. No, but anyway, so that's why I would pick him. I thought he was very believable, did an outstanding job, and tough category though. To be fair, I have not looked ahead to see who's predicted to win. So, Patrick, how about you? I know you've seen those movies as well. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty strong category. I think all four of the acting categories, you could certainly make a case for most of these people ultimately to win. Sterling K. Brown was good in American Fiction, I think maybe a little bit underused. Ruffalo in Poor Things, I think Mark Ruffalo is a very, very talented actor with an incredible range, which I think is fully on display in this movie. And if you read some of the press about it, he initially was very hesitant to play this role before being talked into it for the director, and really just said this is one of his best experiences working. Unfortunately, though, I do think it falls short to at least two of the other two of the other people. I mean, Ryan Gosling in Barbie, I was hoping to, just because of the talk of that movie, to like his performance more than I did. I thought it served the script, but pretty much nothing more. And then so really, but in my opinion, I think it comes down to De Niro or it comes down to Robert Downey Jr. I think both easily could earn that Oscar, but again, just given how his career has gone and just what he brought to the movie, I would have to go with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, I'm surprised. I agree with you though. If De Niro gets it, I won't be mad. I will
yeah
not.
He did
Denier
great.
was excellent, and he had a lot of runtime to really shine on the screen, perhaps more than most supporting actors do.
Yeah,
That's
Patrick,
true.
I'd agree with you about Sterling K. Brown. He was not in that movie enough, and I know this is the supporting category, so this is not the main star of the film, which he was not. I do feel like he was in it for about four scenes, and he was good in those scenes, but certainly probably not worthy of the Oscar, at least compared to, say, Downey Jr. or even Mark Ruffalo, who was basically the whole second half of that movie is Mark Ruffalo and the Emma Stone character and their antics, right? More or less, right?
I
But
thought
I
it
probably,
took a little too long to get to him. Did you feel
yeah,
that way?
it did.
Yes,
Could be. I was
100%.
like, when is he come? Like, I wanted him in sooner.
That was a movie I could not wait for it to end too, though, while I was watching it. But I would have to say I'd agree with you. Of this list, I would pick Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. Having not seen De Niro, and I did not see that movie, so I think we're all in agreement, though. We all
It's
like
a
Downey
sweep.
Jr. I thought he was very good in that movie, and kind of was the only thing for me that held that movie to the end. Because we'll talk about Oppenheimer and Best Picture, but I do feel like it was way too long.
Okay.
Actress in a
I don't think that
supporting
ever
role.
happens. We never agree,
Yeah,
Patrick.
that's never
No.
happened. Yeah, ever.
There you go. Well, one of them at least.
Patrick comes on board and we're all on agreement. Okay, let's see how this goes. Because we never talked about this beforehand.
Patrick, you'll be up next. Actress in a supporting role. The nominees: Emily Blunt from Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks from The Color Purple, America Ferrera from Barbie, Jodie Foster in Naiad, which was not a nominated film either, and we have not talked about that yet. Daveen Joy Randolph from The Holdovers. Patrick, I'll throw it to you first. Have you seen all those films? I think maybe you saw most
So
of them.
I did not see
Naiad?
Naiad. I did not see that one, just because the especially for the actress categories and either supporting or leading, the Oscars love to pick performers who were not in the Best Picture nominees, which often means that in Oscar discussions, even casually or organized, people don't always see them. But this year, I think Naiad was the only sort of aberration there. But at any rate, I think this one's very clear to me in to who I liked. I think ultimately, like, The Holdovers was very high up there for me, and a lot of that movie's emotional heft was carried by Davy Joy Randolph. So I'll have to go with her. I just thought that whole performance was very impressive, and it really gave that movie sort of an emotional counterbalance to what was happening with Paul Giamatti's character, and then the boy who is a new actor has been getting some love for that role, first ever role, and really knocked it out of the park. But yeah.
Steve, what about you? What do
Yeah,
you
I like The Holdovers a lot as well. A couple of the other ones I could easily rule out. Emily Blunt and Oppenheimer, again, just not in it that much. She was in it, but very, very minor character in that movie. And I wasn't even I when I saw the nominees, I'm like, Emily Blunt was in that movie? I didn't even recall her, honestly. I did not see The Color Purple. So Naiad I liked a lot, but I thought that also was like not an Oscar movie, if that makes sense. That was a good movie, like a good Netflix movie, TV movie kind of movie for me. So I'd rule that out as well. To me, though, I feel like Barbie got a little bit of short shrift. There was a lot of talk about why didn't the director get nominated, right? It was the biggest movie of the year, the biggest kind of Taylor Swift aside, the biggest cultural event of the year, probably in the United States. And I feel like here it makes sense to recognize that America Ferrera gives what that classic Oscar speech, right? Her monologue about what women are expected to do and not do, and all of that. We're all probably seen it or seen clips of it anyway. If you haven't seen the movie, that was the Oscar scene. Maybe it's too cliche to say the big Oscar scene gets the Oscar here, but I'd pick her. I'd vote for her if it were my vote.
Wow. Okay. It's funny because when you kind of both go through all the reasons why you chose who you chose, I think we come down to the same two, right? When I'm kind of going through that as well. I think, yeah, Emily Blunt for the reasons you said. I actually like Jodie Foster and Naya. That was a good movie. And I think I liked that movie better than you did, Steve. But I liked it because if you haven't seen it, it's based on a real person. It's extremely grueling, the scenes were. And I think Jodie Foster, I just love Jodie Foster. I mean, forever and ever. So she's great. But I wouldn't say that hers was the one I would give an award to. Going into it, before I had seen The Holdovers, and the caveat I'm going to put here is there's always a movie every year, as Steve knows, that I'm just like, I'm not going to watch it. I hate it already. I don't want to watch it, right? And then shortly thereafter, it becomes like one of my favorite movies of all time. And so I feel like that with The Holdovers. I was not anxious to see it. It didn't look interesting to me at all. I was absolutely America Ferrera for the win till I saw The Holdovers. And Patrick, for some of the reasons you said, I feel like I know we'll talk about him in a little bit, but the gruffness of Paul Giamatti's character absolutely needed that counterbalance, right? And I originally thought, oh, this character that Divine or Devine Joy Randolph plays is just going to be sort of just barely in it. No, she was so needed. And look, spoilers ahead, right? Already, we've kind of said that. If you've not watched these movies, go watch them. But the scene where they go to the restaurant and they want to get the, was it Cherry's Flambé, I think, and they
Cherry's
can't.
Jubilee.
Cherry's Jubilee, that's it.
Yeah.
And so they can't do it because it's alcohol and the young man is underage or whatever. And so they go out into the parking lot and they do this in the parking lot for him, right? And I just felt like she was such a mothering character, and she was so needed, and I loved her, and I really hope she wins. I really do. She was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's my pick.
Yeah, I think I agree with you both, though, in terms of this was a really good movie that the kind of movie that very under the radar, not a blockbuster, not the biggest names. Paul Giamatti's a really good actor, but not a movie star type of actor, right? There's a young actor making his debut in a key role as well, but it hit a lot of the right notes, and it was one of
Gets
my
in there,
favorites.
you know?
It's probably not going to win, but it was definitely one of my favorites of the 10.
I would
Yeah.
agree.
And I would say, I love America Ferrara. She's been in a lot of other movies. I think Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, but where I know her from mostly would be Superstore, where she is kind of a main character or a co-main character. She's a very talented actress. I just feel like in a lot of ways, that big Oscar speech was it's gotten mixed reviews. Which is not kind of what you want for your film's emotional coda of a bunch of people saying it's a little cliche. But she was good in that movie, but if you look at she just didn't make the movie nearly as much as as Devine Joy Randolph. And I think we'll get some and the thing about Emily Blunt being nominated, you almost wish I wish Florence Pugh almost got that nomination as well. I felt like
Right.
her role even in Oppenheimer was more significant, but
I would agree with that. I think it has to have some impact. You have to really feel it. And to me, that's the thing. It's like it doesn't even have to be through a full movie, but when they're on screen, are you emotionally like feeling something?
Yeah, Emily Blunt had that one scene where, it was kind of like the version of the Godfather scene when it was Clement, it was Barzini all along. It was always Barzini. Like there's a version of that scene in Oppenheimer, and that was it. Like after that, I forgot about her. So, all
All
right.
right.
This was good. Let's get into the acting categories. This is the At Work America podcast. We are doing our Oscars preview and prediction show with Steve Bowes, Trish Stead, and our special guest, Patrick Bowes, here today to lend some heft to the movie criticism from his point of view. Actor in a leading role for me. A tough one, honestly. There's not one that absolutely has to be it for me. The nominees are Bradley Cooper in Maestro, Colman Domingo in Rustin. I'll admit to have not seen that movie. Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers. We've mentioned him here already. Cillian, I hope I said that right, Patrick. Cillian Murphy from Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright from American Fiction are the five nominees. I'll throw it to you first, Patrick. You probably got an opinion here. What do you think on best actor?
I also did not see the Rustin, but I'm gonna just focus my discussion on the four actors from Best Picture nominees. I was not 100% aware that Jeffrey Wright had been nominated for that role. It's very well deserved. I think he gave a really phenomenal performance. I think one of the things, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more when we get to the Best Picture segment, but American Fiction is a truly funny movie, arguably like making a claim for one of the more funny movies, but not at all at the expense of dramatic heft or emotional impact, which is something I found really impressive and is a credit to everyone involved in that movie, but talking specifically about Jeffrey Wright. Bradley Cooper and Maestro, I watched that fairly recently. That was kind of, I'm sure you guys have heard about Bradley Cooper's almost like the most Oscar bait of all Oscar bait campaigns. He's talking
Thank you
about how
for saying
immersed he was in this role for 6 years, which frankly, I think anyone, it was not that complex a role where I think, oh, it deserves everything. It's in all the prosthetics, which were unnecessary, although the visual aging in that movie, not related to this, was very impressive. So that really leaves it down to kind of, I think, the two big people who I think are likely to win this award, being either Cillian Murphy or Paul Giamatti. And as much as I love the holdovers, I love it much more as a movie, much more than Oppenheimer. I am gonna have to go with Cillian Murphy just because throughout that entire movie, I think it was very impressive what he was able to do. His range emotionally was very good. He conveyed everything he needed to. He was asked to do a lot in that movie, and I think he delivered. So that he's got my vote.
What do you think,
Yeah.
Tish?
You know what? For the reasons you said, I did see Rustin. I will say, if you haven't seen it, it's, I believe, Netflix. It was really excellent. He does a great job, Colman Domingo. So I can see why he was nominated. He was not my favorite. I have to tell you, I didn't even want to see Maestro. I put that off until the very end because of kind of what you're alluding to, Patrick. He's trying too hard. As soon as I saw the little clip for that, I went, oh my gosh, he took that role so he would get an Oscar. Like, it agree on the aging though. The makeup, amazing, right? So that one again, I didn't hate the movie. I thought I would. Didn't hate it. It was fine. I don't see that being Oscar worthy. Haven't seen American Fiction, so I had to pass on that one. So it comes down to Oppenheimer and the holdovers. I'm gonna say this is kind of where it comes in, the difference of who I think will win is it Cillian Murphy? Cillian Murphy? I think he will win. He was great. It long or not, he does a really nice job. But who I would want to win is Paul Giamatti. Again, because that was one where I didn't think I would enjoy that movie at all. I didn't really see how I was going to relate to that movie. And he personally drew me in. Everything from his bad breath to the way he, talks to the students to kind of, and I won't give it totally away, but by the end, I was like, yes, I love him. He's my guy. And what it is about Paul Giamatti's performances, it makes me want to watch it again. With Oppenheimer, I'm sort of a one and done. I really don't want to see it again. It was great once, but I do think this year Holdovers is going to be mine, where I go back and probably pick up even more the second time and more the third time. I'm going to come back to it. So for that reason, I'm going to say Paul. Steve, what about
Now,
you?
I'm less a student of film as Patrick is, obviously, because one of the things I always, when I look at the acting categories and I tend to want to rule out are performances where I feel like the character was kind of the same throughout the whole movie. So maybe I'm very serious and stern and I'm that way the whole movie, or I'm tormented and troubled and I'm that way the whole movie. And I felt like Oppenheimer was the same person the entire movie, with the same dour face and walking around in the same gray suit the entire movie. It was fine, it was good. Whereas Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers was at times funny, at times serious, at times angry, at times frightened. That he there was a I thought a lot more range there in that performance. And again, that's what was written, that's the character he's playing. I'm a fan of Giamatti myself, and I think he's been never been recognized before with an Oscar. Can he win here? I don't know. Maybe not, but I would pick Giamatti here as well. Even though I expect he probably won't win. And honestly, I feel almost bad not picking Jeffrey Wright. I just watched that movie last night, so it's very fresh in my mind. He was outstanding. And that movie was, Patrick, you're nodding too. He was very funny in that movie, as well as serious and carrying a lot in the character, carrying a lot of the family. There was illness in the family. There was other, issues he was dealing with, and he was outstanding in that movie. And honorable mention to him. But a good category overall, yeah, for sure. Next is actress in leading role. Another interesting category. Your nominees are Annette Bening for Naiad. She plays Naiad in the movie. Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon. Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall. Carrie Mulligan in Maestro. And Emma Stone in Poor Things. We have not really talked about Poor Things in that quick intro at the top. So, Trish, I'll throw it to you first. Poor Things is at, start there if you don't mind. That's a wild, crazy movie, by the way.
Yes, and can I just say, like, the last one I said there were at least two people. I'm not going to be mad if any of these ladies win. I think in their movies, they all did an excellent job. I really do. I do have a favorite, which I'll get to in a second. But so you mentioned Poor Things. Like I mentioned, Mark Ruffalo, I adore him. Willem Dafoe, we haven't even seen him for a long time. I love him as an actor. And Emma Stone is one of my favorites. So I will just say this, we'll get into it more when we get to the best picture, but I wanted to love this a lot more. And does she do a really good job? Yes, she does a good job playing the character as it was written. I just don't like her in it. I don't know. It maybe for me, and I've Googled many times over the years, like, what are the criteria, right? Are there criteria for someone to win? There really aren't. It's just in this case, right? Other actresses will vote on whether or not they think this person should win. So I think for me, it comes down to every one of these ladies. Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall, God, I was on the edge of my seat with her many times. Carrie Mulligan, I've loved her before, right? In other Oscar-nominated movies, she did great, even though I didn't like Bradley Cooper. Lily Gladstone, can I just tell you what? That's one where we'll talk about Killers of the Flower Moon. That is such an awesome movie. That's another one I'm going to watch time and time again. I'm positive of it. And when I was watching that movie, I wanted to see like what the real Lily Gladstone was like. And I Googled her picture. It is basically, you know, Lily. The character, you know, matches the actress. I was just like, oh my gosh. But, and I will say this, I don't love Annette Bening. I'm not a huge fan, but I think she should win.
Really?
I don't think she will, but the physicality.
I don't think so either, honestly, but yeah.
Okay, the physicality of a woman of her age, her advanced age, I think she's in her probably late 60s at this point. The swimming scenes and the sunburn and the jellyfish stings and all of the things that happened to this character. Oh my gosh.
They got a stunt jellyfish though for that scene.
I'm just saying, like the physicality of her role, I'm going to put her at the top. I know she's not going to get it, but that's who I'd give it to if it were me. Patrick, what about
save
you?
This segment there for us, please. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yes, give the real answer.
Well, this is, I think, if you've studied the markets and looked at, you know, the SAGs and the BAFTAs and Critics' Choice Awards, this by far is the most competitive category in across the main categories anyway that we're talking about. And I think really, I obviously haven't seen Naiad, but I think just going off of the description and the synopsis of that movie relative to what it must have taken to actually perform that, I'm sure Annette Bening definitely has a good case for herself. But I mean, besides ruling her out because I haven't seen the movie, all four of those women, you know, give really incredible performances. It's like seeing Sandra Hüller there up there, like, just pains me because I know she's probably not going to win, but Anatomy of a Fall, and it was just such a spectacular movie. But in terms of who I think is going to win, I think Emma Stone, in my opinion, I think by the end of the movie, as her character was literally growing and changing language wise, I think, like, okay, I can see the rationale behind nominating her. But the first third of the movie where she's just trying to act as someone who's like the mental age of a 2-year-old or 4-year-old or something, that just wasn't really working for me, especially, you know, given how the story progresses. And obviously, though, that is the point to some extent. But I gotta go with Lily Gladstone here. You know, kind of really came out of nowhere, gave a spectacular performance, just served as a perfect foil for Leonardo DiCaprio, making a lot of history with the nomination. And overall, just, I mean, she in that movie was conveying so much was conveying so much while doing so little and being asked to do so little, but doing in such a way that the subtlety was truly like incredibly well done. So I would, if I had to pick one of the performers, I'd have to go with Lily Gladstone.
Yeah.
I think that's who will win. I
Yeah,
agree.
I think you're probably right, Patrick. I did not see that one, so obviously I can't comment on her performance, but by
Go
all
see it
accounts,
before
it was
the
phenomenal. I
Oscars.
know, I need a week and a half to watch that movie though. It's so long. But
No, it's worth it. It's
I'd
not like
probably pick
Oppenheimer.
of the ones I saw, I'd go with Patrick and say I loved Anatomy of a Fall too. And Sandra Hüller was the main character of that movie, was in almost every scene that mattered, and sort of the entire movie centered around her and her character and whether or not she was the murderer or not, right? So
Yep.
maybe it's a little too Lifetime for television-esque, but it was better than that. And it was really truly, and you do get to the end and kind of leave questions in your own head about the ending too. So, and I like that movie a lot. Plus, like, kudos for her for also having a big role in The Zone of Interest, which she was not nominated for,
Yep.
but she plays the wife of the Auschwitz commandant in that movie as well. So to have those two high profile roles in two huge movies in the same year is quite something too. So I would choose her of that list, although probably no chance of her winning, sadly. So,
Yeah.
all
I would
right. I
say,
don't know. With
know.
Oscars, I think that you'll be surprised sometimes who other actors and actresses recognize. So we might be surprised.
Yeah. And someone from that movie who I, would have loved to have seen get a nod was the guy who played that lawyer, Vincent. I thought it's excellent in that movie.
Yeah, the lawyer
Yes.
was good. He was very
Yeah.
good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe so, a question for another day is why, like in Best Picture, they've expanded the list of nominees to as many as 10 films. And there's typically now every year 10, but yet in these major acting categories and other categories, there's only five. Like, why can't there be more? Right? I don't know.
This podcast is already hard enough with just
Yeah,
the
we'll
five.
be doing a
Let's keep
3-hour
it at five.
podcast. I wanted to jump in real quick on original song. We usually don't talk about this. I have one comment on original song. The nominees for original song are "The Fire Inside" from "Flaming Hot," music and lyric by Diane Warren. "I'm Just Ken," we've all heard that, from Barbie. "It Never Went Away" from a movie called American Symphony. "Wajashe," a song from My People from Killers of the Flower Moon. And the one that's probably going to win that everybody's heard a million times, "What Was I Made For?" From Barbie by Billie Eilish and Finneas O'Connell. The only reason I wanted to talk about this is I was watching the Grammys a couple of weeks ago, and that song won the Grammy Award or a Grammy Award for one of the categories, and they played it live, and it was really compelling. But here's why I wanted to bring it up as well. We always talk about Oscar snubs and things that should have won or things that make us angry. And in Best Song, I'm still angry. A few years ago, Trish, and this is why I think the winner of this year's Oscar, in a break from tradition, they should award
Okay.
the Oscar to a song that was nominated several years ago but still should win this year. The winner of the Oscar should be Sufjan Stevens for "Mystery of Love" from "Call Me by Your Name." There, I said it. It didn't win 5 years ago and it should have won, and it still should win.
I
It should it should get
fully.
it should win every year until it wins.
We'll see what Patrick says. Patrick, what do you think?
I would love to see that. I think also there's literally a Call Me by Your Name poster. It's a little blurred right now, but you can see kind of a little
Oh,
bit of
is it
Timothée.
behind you?
Yeah, you can see a little bit of Timothée Chalamet right there. The thing that I do just want to say about that is that Sufjan actually had a couple songs in that movie, Feudal Devices, and I'm blanking on the name of the third one, all of which were better than whatever ended up winning that year. So I'm a little
Exactly.
bitter
I'm
about
still
that
bitter
too.
about it.
And I'm bitter about that Gary Oldman career Oscar for playing Winston Churchill over Timothée
Right.
Chalamet too.
And I will tell you what, Patrick, that was the one movie that year that I did not want to see. I waited till the very end to see that movie because I knew that Timothée Chalamet, the actor, was of age, but he's playing someone who is not of age, who is with a grown man. So I had a little conflict there in my mind of like supporting a movie that was about that. Let me just say, 5 years has it been?
It's
That
probably been
is
more than five, but yeah, it's been a consistent.
probably one of my top three favorite movies of all time. I have probably seen that movie now easily 20 times. I love everything about it. The subtleties, like I would go back and give that movie the award for everything. The soundtrack, acting, all of it. Like I'm so emotional when it comes to that movie. So I think too, that's a good Oscar movie to me, where you still think about it long after, right? You've seen it or heard of it, and you go back to it. So
All
I'm
right.
with
That was
you.
the only reason I wanted to talk about that song. And every
Can
year
I give one though?
I'm going to mention that song. Yes. Go ahead, Trish.
I want to say, so American Symphony with John Batiste is nominated. It probably won't win. Billie Eilish probably will, but It Never Went Away from American Symphony to me should win. That thing gives me goosebumps literally from the second it starts playing. And I've not seen the whole thing. I've watched about half of American Symphony, and it's a true story about John Batiste and how his career trajectory was really going strong as his wife finds out she has cancer. Amazing movie. Like it's an amazing movie. So I just say, if you're listening to this and you've not seen it, I think it's on Netflix also. I believe it's Netflix. So, Patrick, did you see that one at all, or have you watched it?
No, I would say that the best songs after that historic snubbing, I try not to put too much stake in it and then make a judgment like during the broadcast because they play all of them.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'd encourage you both to watch American Symphony. It's really good, and it's a true story.
Before we dive into Best Picture, Trish and Patrick, I'll throw it open to you, Patrick, you first. Is there any other category that, we didn't talk about cinematography, we didn't even really mention director, documentary, shorts, anything else you want to quickly throw out there that say, hey, this would be a good one to keep an eye on when the Oscars come on this weekend?
Yeah, well, last weekend I went and saw just a screening of all the live action short films, just because, that I feel like that's a category that certainly gets overlooked by a lot of people just because it's relatively inaccessible. And, same with some of the foreign documentaries or international films, but just saw all of them. The After, Invincible, Night of Fortune, Red, White, and Blue, and The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. The After is a story about someone whose wife and daughter get murdered like minute one, and then he drives Uber. That one wasn't my favorite. That was probably the weakest one. And then Invincible is about a troubled youth in Quebec. That one was actually probably my second favorite. Really beautiful. Some good symbolism, some good cinematography. Night of Fortune about some, I believe, Sweden or Denmark. These two men are at the morgue trying to contemplate with the fact that their wife died and they have to look at the body. Then Red, White, and Blue, which that one it was very timely, about Roe v. Wade, sort of a story with a big twist at the end. That one certainly very relevant and timely. But then the odds-on favorite, which I'm annoyed by, to be honest with you, is The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. That's Wes Anderson. And Wes Anderson coming into the Oscars live action short film is like Michael Jordan coming onto like a high school basketball team and just challenging people. Like he might trip and like break a bone, right? But that's probably not gonna happen. And Wes Anderson's probably gonna walk away with that category. I mean, just like the budget alone that went into that movie compared to all the other four, it's probably all the four combined. Because that was a Netflix production too.
Did
So
you like that movie? I've seen it. Did you like it?
it was a little long, but I found it like intriguing. This was also at about 1:30 a.m. at this point. The screening was very late. But yeah, I mean, I liked Benedict Cumberbatch in it. I think he did a good job narrating. Dev Patel, very good. Ralph Fiennes, Fiennes. And again,
Wow, so that's
this.
not the kind of cast you see in a live action short, right?
Right.
It's like a
You know,
well.
the Invincible doesn't have it's troubled Quebecois child actors. It's not Ralph Fiennes. I
Right.
think has
Well,
been
those
even
were all the same actors too that Wes Anderson had in Grand Budapest Hotel, which is amazing. But I'll tell you what, that's one I watched because I like all of his other movies and I like those actors. And I was just like, what is this? Like, it just felt weird. It felt a little bit like the Bradley Cooper trying too hard. I just felt like, what are we doing here? So if that was a 5 to 10 minute little truly short, I might have liked it, but it was too long for
That was
me.
39 minutes, I think.
Oh, wow.
I had fast forwarded to the end, to be fair, but Beautiful. It's beautiful.
Trish, did you
Okay.
have any other category you wanted to shout out before we just quickly run through the best picture and make our big picks?
No, I think we should get right to it.
Okay, let's do it. And as I'll quickly read them again, and I'll also mention the ones where the director was also nominated for Best Director, because five of these pictures did have their director nominated as well. So again, the nominees for Best Picture are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, director Justine Triet was nominated, Barbie, The Holdovers, we've talked about a lot on the show, Killers of the Flower Moon, director Martin Scorsese also nominated, Maestro, Oppenheimer, director Christopher Nolan nominated. Past Lives, we have not talked about this movie at all on the show, and it was absolutely one of my favorites. Past Lives, Poor Things, director Yorgos Lanthimos nominated. And finally, The Zone of Interest, director Jonathan Glazer also nominated. So those are the 10 Best Picture nominees. Patrick, I'll start with you. You can don't necessarily have to make your pick, but give us some thoughts. Anything stands out, or any two or three that you would rule out, absolutely no way, shouldn't even be on the
Yeah.
list.
So I would say that this has probably been one of the stronger years for Best Picture nominees in a couple years at least. At least going back to right around the beginning of COVID. So it was really reassuring to see. There were really no movies that I tr absolutely hated on this list. There are some that are sort of at my bottom, which I will talk about this with some of my other friends who are really into it. And they'll, we'll yell and banter at each other. But my least favorite was Maestro, just right out of the bat. I think Maestro tried too hard, wasn't that compelling. It was the only movie that I kind of struggled to stay awake in, which is never a good sign. Not to say people have never fallen asleep to good movies, but I don't think that was the case here. And I'm gonna, I would also say The Zone of Interest is likely not going to win. I think it was a good movie, but I have a lot of problems with it, especially with how it is shot. Most of the movie was shot in wide scenes, full shots, which kind of was intentional on behalf of the director and the cinematographer. They don't want you to be close into the emotion throughout the entire process. They want to kind of remain detached, which is fine. But one of my friends described it was good art, but not a good movie. And that's exactly how I would describe it. And there was also a sequence, literally 1 minute of the main character going through his house and turning off the lights, which, even if you're going for symbolism, let's cut that, not even just in half, let's cut that to 15 seconds. I think the audience will get the point. And there were a lot of examples like that. And then the last one I'll say, I just straight up, in my opinion, should not win Best Picture. This will probably ruffle some feathers, would have to be Barbie. That one. It's got a lot of people saying like, oh, Barbie, Greta Gerwig was snubbed. Barbie should win Best Picture. And I think we're all guilty of this. A lot of people, maybe they've only seen Oppenheimer and Barbie, and so they think, oh, it has to be one of those two, right? But it made a lot of money. It was a good movie, but what it really should win for is best production design, best wardrobe rather than best picture. I think it was just lacking in what it needed to be.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, I don't disagree with any of those things. I don't know about sort of the cinematography approach. So it's actually super interesting to hear someone who studied this talking about the angles and whatnot. I would love to just, what are your thoughts then on the way that Poor Things was filmed? Because for me, that was really difficult to watch because of the way it was filmed. It was almost too close up and almost like a fisheye lens or something. It felt like, what did you think about that one?
So Poor Things, the director, Lanthimos, pronunciation question mark, obviously, but I've seen one of his other movies, The Favorite, which I felt really worked.
I love The Favorite. Was that the
They,
one about the Queen of England?
yes,
Okay,
the
yes, I
Queen and
remember that one.
her two lovers who
Yeah.
were,
With Emma Stone, who was amazing.
and Olivia Colman and all that. Yeah, it was a Nicholas Holt, I think even too, but that was a very good movie. And one thing that just reading a little bit about it in the interviews, like they deliberately ramped it up a notch for Poor Things as an intentional choice. And obviously, the beginning 40 minutes or so being shot in black and white, that's also an intentional choice. They deliberately went with crazier lenses, more out there effects, with how they were deciding to shoot it, And I think there are some sequences where it works, like for example, the dance scene when she's dancing with Mark Ruffalo's character. I thought that was probably my favorite shot visually, just from how that was filmed. But also, like, there were multiple times when, the fisheye can become a little distracting.
Well, thank you for explaining that, because that was all it's as someone who doesn't know about those things, it is a little challenging sometimes to watch movies when you're thinking like I it's it is distracting to watch the actual story unfold sometimes the way it's shot, right?
Trish, is there any of these movies? We've talked about most of them. Anyone you want to just call out, talk about a little bit more before we get into your pick?
I would just say this. I agree that, I have Maestro, Poor Things, and actually Barbie at the bottom of my list for an Oscar. I love Barbie, but I just didn't feel like it was a true Oscar movie. Great movie. I did write down it made $1.4 billion, but that goes back to like just because something makes a
Nice.
lot of money and is commercially successful does not mean that it's a well thought out, well produced, well just deserving, I guess. I want a movie that's going to really make me think about it, and I want it to be whatever I choose today is something I want to be able to go back and say in 5 years I've watched this now 20 times. So that's just kind of my. So I pretty much agree. Didn't see Zone of Interest, but I would agree with where Patrick is on those.
I put some value for me in just movies that kind of resonated with me. I will think about well after I saw them. I maybe want to go back and watch them again, maybe even multiple times in the future. We talked about Call Me by Your Name, right? A little bit. That's an absolute example of one of those movies you'd go back to multiple times. It left you still thinking it ended in a way it ended, and you're like, man, that was so powerful. And so I think about that a lot when I watch some of these movies, and there are definitely some of them that I could not wait for them to end, so I never had to think of them again, right?
That's right.
Oppenheimer was one, honestly. Poor Things is another one. I couldn't wait for it to be over with. Oppenheimer's 45 minutes too long, that they build this whole crescendo up to, is the bomb going to work in the test or not? Is it going to work or not? Is it going to work or not? They test the bomb and boom. Movie should have been over. The whole rest of the movie could have been like, we could have read that on the screen at the end. After the war, Oppenheimer was, chastised by the Senate for possibly being a Russian spy or whatever. Like, that could have been a scroll at the end of that movie, and we could have all gone home happy. I'm serious. Way too long. So one of the movies, like I said, we didn't talk about much, and I feel bad about because I really liked it a lot, was Past Lives. A quieter movie, a slower movie. It's about two childhood friends who were from South Korea who get reunited 20 years later. And they were just kids when they knew each other. So they weren't like boyfriend and girlfriend or lovers or engaged or anything. They were just really close friends at 12 years old. They got separated by due to immigration and other things. They get reunited a couple of times in their lives. And it's kind of a reflection on kind of, well, how would my life have been different if, right? Some things had gone just a little bit differently for me. And just it was interesting. It was meditative. I found it just, I left it thinking, boy, that was really, I stuck with me a little bit. I don't think it has any chance to win, right? Because it was a smaller movie, a foreign movie, subtitled movie, all the things, right? But that doesn't mean it can't win, but really,
Parasite
really,
one.
yeah, Parasite
Parasite
was.
is one of the best movies of all time.
So I really, really underrated movie, I think, and a great movie. If I had to pick, though, my favorite of the 10, the one I would vote for the Oscar, I think would be The
Wait, drum roll.
Holdovers. It'd be The Holdovers. I resonated with me in similar ways. It's a different movie, of course, but left me thinking, left me sort of caring, really emotionally resonant. All the main characters had very, very emotional kind of elements and parts of their story that were important and meaningful. So yeah, that would be the one for me.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I'm really glad that you talk about past lives, but I think that's a good example of why every person will have a different reaction, right? We've had a couple that are similar, and Steve, I'm happy to say we're back to disagreeing. So nothing wrong with past lives. It was okay. I'll probably never watch it again. I don't get why it's so important to go back and look at who you kind of had a crush on when you were 12. I don't know that's I don't know. Maybe it's cool. It didn't bother me that it was, was subtitles at all, because Patrick, you mentioned Parasite, which that's another one I've watched probably at least 10 times. I mean, I don't even have to look at the words anymore and I know what's going on and I'm watching and finding new little nuggets. But that one I put solidly in the middle. I've got Oppenheimer solidly in the middle. Again, Good movie. It tells a story, maybe true, maybe embellished, who knows? My top two, I have The Holdovers and Killers of the Flower Moon. Here's the thing. The Holdovers, like I said, I did not want to like, I did not want to watch. For all the reasons we've talked about with the acting, in all categories, and even for the young man that Patrick, I didn't know that was his first role. Like,
Yeah,
what?
I think it's Paul
Oh, gosh.
Cessna, it's something like that.
Gosh, I hope he stays in acting. Like, loved
Or
him too.
Dominic Cessna, sorry.
Was that it? Yeah,
Yeah.
he's phenomenal. But Killers of the Flower Moon was another one. I think I spent the first 20 minutes going, what in the world am I watching? What's going on? What is happening? And I am not a huge Leo fan, Leonardo DiCaprio. He's okay. I'm not a huge fan, so that's not why I like it. But man, I was sucked in. I wanted to know more. I wanted to know who are these people in reality? Does the movie kind of match what really happened? I had no idea about what happened with oil being found in Oklahoma, with the Osage Nation, getting rich off of this, and then people coming to steal their money and take advantage of them, and that these murders were a real thing. Totally drawn in. Patrick, you mentioned the subtleties of Lily and her acting. My gosh, she doesn't have to say a word, and I'm just completely mesmerized by her. Just so for me, Steve, to your point, it probably will not win, but man, if I were to give it, I think that is hands
That's your
down the
number
best
one.
movie.
Okay.
Killers of the Flower Moon is my number one.
All right,
Patrick,
Patrick,
what about you?
your final pick, your
So,
vote for best picture of the year.
yeah. So I said my 10-9-8 being Maestro, Barbie, and the Zone of Interest. And just because I haven't really talked about it, seven past lives. So kind of that bottom half for me. I think, although that was probably one of, if not the shortest, that was the one I had the biggest issues, the most issues with the pacing. And if you look at the breakdown of the ages, it's in three stages, one where they're 12, then they're like in their 20s, then they're in their like early 30s. When they're 12, it's 10 minutes, which was far too short, given that that's kind of the emotional foundation of the entire movie. So, which goes to show maybe they were filming constraints. Maybe that was how it was written. Maybe they just didn't trust those child actors and actresses, but they were perfectly lovely in the 10 minutes we saw. So I don't know what the deal was with that at all, really. And then so you've got the 25 minutes of them connecting again for the first time, and it's really exciting. Then it's an kind of an hour long slog to get to the end of the movie. Had some very beautiful moments, relevant as someone in a relationship with someone whose English is not their first language. That was covered there. That was really emotional and very poignant and romantic in times. And it did have its moments, but not quite my favorite, but it's certainly a good movie, deserves some love. But
Can I just say
then
thank you for mentioning the pacing? See, I didn't realize what I wasn't enjoying about it, but I think that you're getting to the heart of it. I just didn't understand why I cared. And maybe had they spent more time there, maybe I would have felt
well
more.
well you look at a film like Moonlight, which is basically the same thing, a three act structure of a character aging
Yeah.
and the time of him as I believe Little was what he went by in the first part of the movie, was far longer than this, and more things were happening. And then almost the middle part that gets condensed a little bit, but that actually works a lot better when you think about how a story works. And then number six being Poor Things. I won't get too much into it. I feel like you guys have echoed some of my complaints with the movie. A little weird, a little out there. I had issues with the pacing on that one as well. Then Killers of the Flower Moon is five for me. I think it's a great movie, in my opinion. I think that Oppenheimer, I don't have any length complaints with, which we'll get to because it's my number four. But Killers definitely could have shaved off 20, 30 minutes.
I would agree with that.
And that's a problem with these mega projects, which Scorsese loves. It's just like, at a certain point, you do have to admit that the venue you're choosing to tell your story matters. And for a movie, just the optimal time for a movie is 2 hours, an hour and a half. And then Oppenheimer 4, it was a good movie, but in my opinion, like my top three are just fantastic, phenomenal movies. I don't think they're gonna win. But between The Holdover in number three, American Fiction, number two, Anatomy of a Fall, number one, The Holdovers. So if I had a vote, it would go to holdovers. But honestly, like American Fiction, what shocked me with how good it was. Great performances all the way through, and a very like completely unexpected emotional gut punch, but that somehow lands in the first 20 minutes of something tragic happening to the main
Yeah,
characters.
that was super surprising too. Again, I just watched this one last night, so maybe I remember it the best. I could not believe that without spoiling it, but what just happened? Because you were set up for these two characters to be so important to the film, and all of a sudden one of them is well, yeah. I think a movie that's much, much better probably than most would think who have not seen it. Yeah.
If there was one movie I think people haven't seen on here that they should watch that would surprise them, it'd be American Fiction.
Yeah.
And also just the funniest movie, has a lot to say about our society, which I really value. I value in obviously all of these movies. That's something that I look for, either saying something about either society or the human condition, or both. Anatomy of a Fall again just shocked me. Maybe I'm gonna get some grief from some of my friends for not putting it as first, and it may end up as first the more I have time to think about it. But just crazy out of nowhere, I thought like, oh, I'd hate this movie, and then it's just such a gripping legal procedural with amazing performances and some great set pieces, a lot of heart. And obviously it's kind of like a whodunit movie in some senses. I still don't know if she killed him or not,
Yeah, you don't
and
find out.
you
Yeah.
don't find out. And one
That's
thing,
right.
I just not to get too into the weeds, but just very quickly, there's a scene in a courtroom where a conversation between her and her now dead spouse has been recorded, and it's a flashback for almost all of the scene. We see it actually happening, even though it's a recording. But then there's an altercation, a fight, and then it cuts back to the courtroom. So
That's
we're forced to make a decision based on what happened on the same evidence that a potential jury and everyone else is having to make a decision off of. Just really, really cool. And then lastly, even though it would probably be my prediction is Oppenheimer, just because it's won a billion awards. People love Oppenheimer. It's a deserving movie. It's very good. I would disagree with the length criticism, just because I think that additional length is needed for both Oppenheimer's plot and the plot with I'm forgetting his name, but Robert Downey Jr.'s character
Right.
needed some space. But the holdovers, I mean, that's the only one on this list I've actually watched multiple times in theaters, because which is rare for me. Oh my God, it's a beautiful movie. Great performance from Dominic Sesta, Davin Joy Randolph, Paul Giamatti. Just surprisingly full of heart. And I love a good period movie from the 70s from
Yeah,
time to
some
time.
of the scenery, the cars, there's a lot of really cool 70s vibe going on in that movie too. So, listen, guys, this has been super fun. We're over an hour into this, so we should probably be we've complained about these movies being too long, at least I have for the last hour or so. We should probably give a nod to this podcast being too long as well. Thank you for listening. If you made it to the end, we do appreciate that, and we love doing this show every year. We will continue to do it. It's super fun. It gets us out to the movies, and it's a great way to just kind of get those cultural experiences that, quite frankly, I probably wouldn't run out and watch all 10 movies if we weren't going to be talking about them on the show.
Can I also give a shout out to our friend Dr. Matt Stalick for sending me Oscar paper clips? Right? I'm going to show this if for anyone watching on the video. It's really cute.
Those are
So
cool.
having Oscar gear is critical to your watching.
Yeah, I got dressed up for the podcast. I got a tie, which I didn't really put on, but there it is.
I got dressed up as well. I have a dress
Yeah,
on.
fantastic stuff. So the Oscars are this Sunday. We're going to turn this recording around real quick. It'll get out tomorrow. And thank you so much, Patrick, for spending a little time with us. Shout out your YouTube channel, because I think that's the name.
It's been a joy having you on here. Always wanted to be on the Oscar podcast, give my expertise there. But for those of you listening, please check out my YouTube channel. It's just on YouTube. My friends call me Pat. And I'm have my own video, my own take on the Oscars of ranking the movies in a little bit of a shorter form format that'll be coming out this week.
Awesome. Good
Good.
stuff,
Thank
Pat.
you
Good to
for
see you.
coming on. Please come back next year because I think you also, for me, you helped me understand things that maybe I wasn't picking up on because I'm not trained that way. So that's always interesting. And just sharing kind of your perspective on why things are important when it comes to the actual making of a movie, which I really appreciate.
Awesome to be here. Thanks
All
for
right,
having
great,
me.
great stuff. Trish, great stuff. Thank you, of course, for all your hard work. We spend more time on this podcast than any show the entire
We
year, just
do.
because we watch hours and hours and hours of movies.
That's right.
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks to our friends at Paychex, of course, for all their support. Go to paychex.com/AWIA for more. Go to hrhappyhour.net for all the show archives. My name's Steve Doze. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time, and bye for now.